Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
I really know how to hurt a guy. Dan and Amy, good morning. And a question, and I'm asking for 60,000 of my friends over at Soldier Field yesterday. Does Cody Parkey kick with magnetic balls, magnetized balls?
Yeah, because the sixth time that he hit the upright, but then this time he hit the upright and then he hit the crossbar, and I thought it was going to bounce back, and it bounced forward, and everybody cried.
I can't describe this any better than it was described by the announcers on Spanish radio.
All right,
This was a moment that transcends the language barrier.
Pie de Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló. Oh. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. Los hijos se van con la victoria. No, señor. No, señor. Chicago. Chicago. Nos vamos para New Orleans. Philadelphia gana el partido.
The translation to that is he missed it.
Well, no, senor. Does that mean no way? Like, no way. No way. No, senor. No, senor.
Look, these guys make soccer sound exciting. So an actual exciting play like that.
But then he broke out in a song. Bear down, Chicago Bears. Oh, most hated man in Chicago this morning? Cody Parkey?
Cody Parkey.
Or that guy?
Yeah, exactly.
No, because he is going to change his name to Cody Parkey.
I was at the game.
You went to, you lucky dog.
Yeah.
Do you sit in the Cadillac Club?
No.
With your fancy friends?
There is no Cadillac Club anymore, which shows how recently you've been to a game.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, I sat outdoors with the hoi polloi.
Oh.
Good man of the people that I am.
Did you wear your loafers with no socks?
Natalie attired, of course, because that's what you do for a football game. Get dressed up in your Sunday best.
Well, that's what they used to do.
It was a little cold, so I left.
You did not leave.
No, I did leave.
You left early?
Yeah, I left early.
But it was pretty much a close game the whole time. Why are you such a pansy?
Well, I figured, it's going to take 40 minutes to get out of here, then get a car. So I'll just beat the crowds.
You could have taken a rickshaw home.
It was a nice night for a rickshaw.
Just put a blanket in front of your
head. Yeah, nice night for a divvy ride.
Well, he's not suicidal.
Cody.
Or Cody? Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. I feel terrible. Let the team down. That's on me. So I have to own it. I have to be a man. And, it's unfortunately, that's the way it went today. I'm going to continue to put things in perspective, continue to just put my best foot forward and just sleep at night knowing that I did everything in my power this week to go and make that kick. And for whatever reason, at the crossbar and the upright, and I still couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, who are you going to blame, the upright?
Yes, it's all the upright's fault. Yeah. But I mean, if they hadn't called that timeout, he made the first kick. He made the first 43-yarder and then called a timeout to ice him out, and I guess it worked. Good coaching.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn from this.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, one commentator back in Game 16 suggested pull the starters, lay down for the Vikings, because there's no way Minnesota comes to Soldier Field and gets out alive. And Kirk Cousins would have not performed last night the way that Nick Foles did. And they could have chosen that path. But instead, they got a hot Philadelphia team with a Super Bowl
wild card team, right?
Quarterback, yeah. Super Bowl Cowboy quarterback in Nick Foles, and did just enough to win.
Cowboys won, Chargers won, Colts won. It's all the wild card teams.
Cowboys division champs.
Except for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
But the Colts and the Chargers.
Oh, yeah, right, because Kansas City was the champ.
Yeah, Yeah.
Kansas City was the
there. But I was expecting everyone to go to L.A. this coming weekend. Now no one's going.
Well, you can still go. It's just Cody Parkey won't be coming with you.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
The Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló. Oh. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor.
No, no señor's got to be a meme that goes viral. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's got to mean no way.
That is one of the great.
No, señor.
That's right. I mean, that's one of the great calls. That's right up there with Dick Enberg's. Oh, my. I mean, that is no, señor. I love that. All right. Can't play enough of that. That, of course, describing Cody Parkey's clank. Kevin Rooney tweeting in.
Yes.
Cody Parkey originally wanted to be a lawyer, but he couldn't pass the bar.
Oh.
Oh.
Did you see the meme that was going around with him and the bird box thing? He's kicking the ball with the blindfold on. That was a good one. My kids thought that was funny.
Bird box is like, what's the hysteria bird box? I saw
it. I watched it, too. I finally, Justin, I told Justin I was too afraid to watch it, but I watched it in the daylight on Saturday, and because I get so creeped out at movies like that. That was a good movie. That was suspenseful.
That's solid.
It was great.
Solid.
So, well, the thing is that everybody's blindfolding themselves and then walking through parking lots and trying to find their way through their houses.
Oh, good.
And falling and hurting themselves. Perfect. I wonder why.
Life imitating art, imagine. Jim in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, that movie reminded me of a game we used to play, Pin the Tail on the Donkey. But
yes, right, yes.
You know, that announcer sounded like my wife on our honeymoon, but that's beside the point.
Hey!
You know, they should have what they do for next year. Corey and Bartman can ride together because Corey's not going to be on the Bears, and they can sit and watch the games. And the 49ers had this kicker. I think his name was Gold, Robbie Gold.
Yes. Robbie Gold, yes, that kicker.
He would have been let's Robbie go on the cheap and get and shoot ourselves in the foot.
Well, yeah.
I think Robbie Gold
thanks
could have
for the
made
call,
that
Jim.
Kick.
Well, he's made 82 of the last 85 kicks he's tried since he left the Bears. So that's pretty good percentage.
He made a disparaging remark against Virginia, and then that ruined it. And that's what I heard was they were hell-bent on getting rid of him then. Because you don't
hit the... It was cash, too. A lot of money for a kicker. You figure you can replace him. And, you know, again, in terms of the argument that, the Bears were penny-wise and pound-foolish with respect to getting rid of Gold, I mean, they did pick up Khalil Mack's contract.
That's true.
So, I mean, they did spend money this year, which is something that is very un-McCaskey-like. And look at paid dividends. Maybe they'll continue that trend. All right, we've got a real treat here. Cody Parkey is under contract. So they're going to cut him and pay him out for another kicker? I don't know.
He's 26 years old. He's young.
I think Cody Parkey, if he doesn't try to pass the bar, is going to be back next year to kick.
Oh, too soon.
A very special very special call coming up right here. We don't get this very much because he's not allowed to leave his butter-churning station but twice a year to make a phone call with the two tin cans, one that is wired into this studio.
Yes.
And the other out Huntley Way, where the Amish Texter lives. Amish Texter, a pleasure.
Wow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Are you sure the source of that recording? To me, that sounded exactly like Mexican restaurant owner last time that J.B. Pritzker showed up at the buffet.
Hi-oh! Thank you, Amish Texter.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. And the question for your consideration and reaction is, if Ed Burke is convicted on federal corruption charges, will that change one damn thing in Chicago? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. How serious is the legal jeopardy in which Burke finds himself? The old man took to Facebook on Friday.
He's so hip and cool with the kids, Dan.
He's got a message to all of you out there, all of his friends and supporters, donors, extortion victims, potential legal defense fund contributors. He didn't do it.
By now, I'm certain that you've learned of yesterday's events. I want you, my friends and supporters, to know that I fully intend to seek re-election. And I am hopeful that you and my many friends will continue to do the work you've already been doing. I appreciate your help and your support, and I want you to know that my family and I want you and your family to have a healthy and wonderful new year.
Oh, my
God.
God
bless you and your families.
Oh, thanks so much, Uncle Ed.
Well, he has four Hispanic competitors, and I think that this might be his, I think he's done. I think he might be toast after this. Stepping down as a chairman of the financial committee that happened during the show on Friday, and Mayor Emanuel was hailing Ed Burke as a hero for this valiant decision that he made.
And I believe this reflects his affection for the city and his deep respect for the institution of the city council.
An institution worthy of deep respect. There's no question that this legal imbroglio, federal indictment, is a reflection on Ed Burke's affection for the city and respect for the city council. There's Tiny Dancer. Remember, he was one of those independent reformers you hear so much about. I was coming into town about 2011 to shake things up, to speak truth to power, to make the tough decisions. And even on his way out the door, which had one more government succubus in charge here for a period of time, is providing professional courtesy to one of the thieves in the den in which Tiny Dancer lives as well. I think that's touching.
That's so sweet.
It's really nice.
Yeah, and Tony Breckwinkle, who was the recipient of this alleged dirty money, because Burke had a fundraiser for her when she was running for Cook County Board President at his home. He personally gave her $10,000. She said she gave that back. But people want to know, are you going to give back the other money?
This isn't a complicated...
Will you return all of the money raised from the fundraiser that Ed Burke held for you?
To be determined.
Okay, when? Here's the thing. There's
Does that even matter?
There's so much obsession about this $10,000 Preckwinkle was the beneficiary of per
the shakedown.
Burke's extortion, alleged extortion. I mean, so she gives the money back, so what? What is that? Does that absolve her? Does that cleanse her of a relationship with Burke? I mean, the obsession, this is all inside baseball, cheap politics. Susana Mendoza decrying the $10,000 that Tony Preckwinkle got and her effort to conceal it and her indecision with respect to returning it. So what? So she returns it. Oh, by the way, is she going to fire Ed Burke's son as well that she put on the county payroll for $100,000?
Oh, really? Well, she thinks... You know,
I mean, but you see what they're doing? This, like, if you give the donation back, then somehow you've eliminated the storied relationship that you've had with the person in question. It eliminates nothing. I don't care if she gives the money back or not. Preckwinkle, another one of these independent reformer goo-goos from Hyde Park. Bull jive. Political hack. Wholly owned subsidiary for the public sector unions for the last 25 years, including her tenure as Cook County Board President, and now we're going to pretend that she doesn't know Ed Burke if she gives the money back, and the other people giving the money back, Susana Mendoza among them, they don't know Ed Burke. Bill Daley doesn't know Ed Burke. They don't have any relationship. They're not part of the same cabal. Give me a break.
One person that does feel victimized by this alleged dirty money, Dan, is Bob Fioretti, who I forgot he ran against her for Cook County Board President.
She was on the receiving end of the money that Ed Burke allegedly extorted from the Burger King owner. And that money was used against me in the Cook County Board President's race.
Yeah, okay, Bob. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Same thing, Mendoza. For your race, do the same thing. Bob, get a grip. You were on the city council. What'd you do to take on Ed Burke? What'd you do to remove this ridiculous security detail from him? Did you speak out against Ed Burke in all your time on the city council? I mean, let's just be honest here. $10,000? Tony Preckwinkle didn't need Ed Burke's $10,000 to be Bob Fioretti in that primary. Well, it was not a close race.
And she wants to distance herself now from Ed Burke. Just take a listen to this.
It's clear he can no longer uphold the integrity of public office and should step down from his role as alderman immediately.
I mean, who buys this stuff from these people? The Tribune, Tony Preckwinkle hired Ed Burke's kid to a $100,000 a year job in 2014. Ed Burke Jr., training and exercise manager for the county's Homeland Security and Emergency Management Department, Tribune reporting.
That's a nice job.
You think, yeah,
what qualifies him to have that kind of position?
What do you think it is?
Homeland Security, the last name.
Exactly.
The B and then the E at the end.
And now Preckwinkle is aghast. I'm saddened and disappointed. And he has no place in city, county. Come on.
But the arrogance of him, though.
This is all kabuki theater. Does anybody buy this? And the answer is yes, they do. A lot of people. Most people in Chicago are going to buy the preening that you're getting from these politicians because they understand something that people who actually pay attention, who have firing synapses, who truly have affection for the city, understand, which is the people in this, the electorate, the majority electorate, has no institutional memory or any particular concern to have institutional memory. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text
but
line.
The arrogance of him, though, to run again for a 13th term, I mean, as if we'll get through
this. We've
been through this before, Dan. This isn't my first investigation. I mean, that's the thing. I do really think he's going to win.
He'll probably win he'll probably make it to the runoff.
Okay.
There's a reason there's four Hispanic candidates. How many were put up by Burke?
Oh,
I mean, right. His ward now is a majority Latino ward. But again, he is a storied Latino community leader, too.
He does speak a little Spanish. He was trying.
Un poco.
Maybe he was working on the call, you know, with those Spanish radio guys when Corey, what's his name? Cody Parkey.
Yeah.
Missed the field goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's something else about Ed Burke that I think is illuminating. We looked at his donors. This is at ChicagoCityWire.com. I'll tweet it out.
I want to read.
There's an interesting thing about his top donors. There's no mega donors here. I mean, there's mega donors in terms of their personal wealth, but not in terms of their giving to Burke. And it's really important. Burke's 60 top donors, including lobbyists, liquor store owners, billionaires, work comp lawyers, they've given him $965,000 since 1999. So, the remarkable thing about that is how unremarkable that number is over the course of 20 years from 60 people that have that kind of interest in city business or that kind of giving power. And you know what it speaks to? You just cut Burke in on everything. Every little deal, like the stupid Burger King renovation, not stupid to the owner.
Right, but stupid that he would hold them up. For that kind of cash, hold up the project.
But that's
the permit.
But it's not stupid. He's like, why would he do that? Why would? Because that's what he's done for 50 years.
Right. This time he got caught. Right. I mean, he's been doing it.
But it's the little things. It's not the big deals. Everybody wants to focus on Amazon or bringing in some big corporate headquarters. And meanwhile, the practitioners of the dark arts of politics in office, in control of this city and state, like Burke and Madigan. It's a little bit at a time. I don't need to be a hog. I need to be a pig. I need to be a pig. Just cut me in. It's $5,000 here and $10,000 there, and you spread that over for whether it's property tax appeals or it's shaking or it's permit expediting, like in this Burger King case. All of the different shakedowns and $5,000 here and $10,000 here spread over the hundreds of clients that you force your way into. Into signing on with you, boy, that adds up to real money, especially over time. That's how Burke puts together a $9 million war chest, being one of 50 city council members, the finance committee chairman notwithstanding. That speaks to the political culture. Every little thing that you do, the little guys that get fleeced, forget Melman and Let Us Entertain You, big restaurant outfits, every restaurant, every gas station, every small business, every
mom and pop,
every property tax appeals, Burke gets the skim. And that adds up to real money. So how could Burke get taken down by this, you know, relatively minor deal of a renovation of a Burger King in his ward? Because that's what he's done for 50 years. And by the way, there are many more like him who have amassed great wealth or just some wealth doing the same thing in public office. That's the kleptocratic political culture. And if you don't understand that part of it, then you're not seeing Chicago for what it is.
So does, on an ancillary issue, does Alderman Pat O'Connor, who's now the new finance committee chair, does he get the security detail now? Is his life in danger?
Because
I kept looking, I wanted to see, because I remember when Rob Blagojevich got impeached. I will never forget, because I was on his front lawn. Excuse me,
sure,
with a
weeping.
Bunch of reporters.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. And the state police who were guarding him, it seemed so violent. They took the car seat out of the kids and just threw it on the lawn. And then they hightailed out of there because they were done. No more security detail for him.
Right. You go.
Bye. Because they weren't too fond of him, from my sources. There's no love lost. Like, bye, see you later.
They threw all the stuff out. They didn't even have the decency to leave his hairbrush behind.
Alderman Edberg, did they security detail leave? I hope to goodness.
He
took a taxi to and from court.
He's only been indicted. Oh, well, now he's a man of the people.
And then he has to hand in by today his passport and his 23 weapons.
Right. And he needs those 23 guns. I know the hypocrisy is the least of his sins. He needs those 23 guns for the city that he and his fellow feudal lords have created, doesn't he? Including in his ward, back of the yards. Boy, the ironies, they just abound. Here's something else. 8 months of wiretaps on his cell phone, 9,500 conversations. I want to hear the tapes.
I want to hear all of the tapes.
Getting a roster of all who were conversing with Ed Burke and those conversations is more important than even a Burke conviction and sending some 75-year-old man away for a few years, because that's all it's going to be. That's what's really important. We didn't get justice in the Blagojevich case. It has nothing to do with Blagojevich's sentence, because we never heard the tapes. And all the rumors that abound about what Rahm said during the time of the Senate seat, we didn't get it. And then, you know, you have somebody leak the J.B. Pritzker conversations, but it shouldn't take somebody running for governor and somebody leaking what they reporter, who knows, somebody from inside justice, I don't know, leaking those Blagojevich Pritzker conversations. We should have heard it all from the outset, or at least as soon as the case was adjudicated. And that's what the public should be demanding in this case. I want to know who was wheeling and dealing with Burke. Part of it you can see on his D2s, but that just tells you a lot about who the extortion victims were. And the contributions don't tell you
the real story. That's the finishing touch. What did it take to get to the contribution?
Well, it's surface skimming. It's the tip of the spear with respect to the beneficiaries. By the way, beneficiaries of Burke's campaign cash include Republicans, Jim Durkin, Dan Cronin.
Oh, really?
So you may be wondering, where's the call from Republicans? Do any Republicans want to comment on this? Have you heard any Republicans comment on Ed Burke? Mm-hmm. Right.
All I heard is that a lot of Chicago politicians and state politicians are having a hard time sleeping at night. Because when people do hear these tapes, we're going to learn a lot.
If.
Well, can't we?
No call from the Republicans about this. The Republican leaders, such as they are, the ones with leadership titles, obviously they're not leaders. John Cass's bipartisan combine. And we should try, like hell, to get as much of a look-see, as much evidence as the feds have presented for public consumption.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, I guess it is being reported that Tony Preckwinkle, Tony.
Ugh. That's no lady, man. I don't mean to get catty, but you want her representing Chicago?
Loved her on Sanford and Son.
Oh, hey, now.
She is going to return all $116,000 that she received from Burke over the years. Really?
And from the funds from that party they had for her?
Yeah.
Ed and Ann?
I repeat my indifference. And so? So what does that accomplish? Now, do we pretend now that she's separated from Ed Burke? Do we pretend now that those relationships that generated that cash over many years don't exist? I mean, it's all like suspension of disbelief theater. Stupid.
It's embarrassing. We can do better.
All right. Speaking of stupid, the Sunday talkies were obsessed about the partial shutdown of the government. They want it to end because they're the big government press corps. And they're pressing President Trump as to whether he still wants to own this shutdown. And the operative question to the surrogates, as well as to the president at his presser, press avail, why not just fund the part of the government that's shut down currently and then continue negotiating over border security funding?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, day 17 of the partial government furlough, and the cable news networks are losing their mind. Big government media obviously wants big government open and funded. They've got a lot of sentimental stories about what some federal workers are allegedly going through during this time away. Non-essential federal workers, of course. There's no irony in non-essential. If it's not essential, then why?
Yeah, but yeah. Border Patrol agents, ICE agents, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
TSA, they're yeah. not going to be getting their paychecks this Friday. Uh-huh. I don't know about you, but I would not be in a good mood if I was not receiving my paycheck this Friday.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Do you get those stories, those same maudlin stories about what befalls families when it's a business that shuts down because of terrible public policy in a place like, I don't know, Chicago or Illinois? A factory closes up, they invest somewhere else because of terrible public policy at the hands of these politicians that the handmaidens in the D.C. press corps and their regional outposts in places like Chicago are wont to tell us? No. No, you don't. I have empathy for anybody who is between work or living paycheck to paycheck. That's fine. But let's understand what's at stake here. And Lindsey Graham on Face the Nation over the weekend put it in no uncertain terms. I think he explained it quite nicely to the question that if you paid any attention over the weekend, you heard repeated because there's one brain that's shared by the Gang of 500 inside the Beltway. Why not just fund the government, reopen that small section of the government that's not currently open, can you tell, and then continue negotiations over border security funding? Lindsey Graham has the why.
Well, there are about 800,000 federal workers who are in this limbo, yeah. not being sure when yeah. they're going to get paid. So
yeah.
with them in mind, why can't you reopen the government while you argue about the things you just laid out?
Why would you negotiate with somebody who calls you a racist if you want a wall, who gives you a dollar for a wall, when the Democratic Party supported $25 billion in the past? We're not going to negotiate with people who see the world this way. We'll negotiate with Dick Durbin, but I'm not going to negotiate with somebody who calls the Border Patrol agents a bunch of Nazis when they're trying to defend the border against a mob. These caravans have changed everything. The reason you need $5 billion now and not 1.6 is the border is deteriorating in terms of security. We've got 11,000 unaccompanied minors coming mm-hmm. from Central America, and it cost us $750 a day to house these minors, and only God knows what they go through to get here. The Democrats see our law enforcement officers as the problem. We see the illegal immigrants, the coyotes, and the drug dealers as a problem.
Well, what about those people changes, who work for Homeland Security, who are carrying out the policies you're talking about, who are not going yeah. to get paid? Yeah. What about the Coast Guard?
Yeah, they're being held hostage. They're being held hostage by people who say you need $1 to secure the border. They're being held hostage by people.
So you don't want to open the government and then continue talking?
I do want to open up the government, but the goal is not to open up the government. The goal is to fix a broken immigration system, to bring reality to this table, that ICE is not the problem, it's the solution. The goal is to repair a damaged, broken immigration system, is to implement mm-hmm. policies Democrats have voted for in the past on President Trump's watch. We're not going to give in to this radical left. ever until we can find a rational way forward where we'll have wall as part of a border security plan, we're going nowhere. Wall plus DACA plus TPS makes sense. But you'll never convince me that we don't need a wall.
2 points there. One is, and that was a great two-minute takedown by Lindsey Graham. Two important points. One is, the goal here is to address border security, not to just keep open the government so that people have paychecks. That's not the purpose of public policymaking, I'm sorry, or the prioritization of it. Number two is the thing that Graham said at the end. Remember, Republicans have been willing to deal on this issue with respect to things like deferred action for childhood arrivals, DACA, and providing a pathway for people who are brought to this country illegally by their parents to stay here legally. President Trump provided it during Schumer's shutdown. And it is still on the table, and
they're not moving on.
And Democrats aren't interested in all of these humanitarian goals they say animate them. They're interested in opposing Trump at any cost, including the cost of opportunities for those constituents they say they want to represent, like the DACA people.
I know, it's so strange. They have this golden apple that they can seize upon, and they're not using it because really, they don't care about the people who are here illegal. They don't care about shutting down the borders. I'm not shutting down, but putting a wall up. What they wanted over the weekend, they demanded to see a breakout of the 5.7
billion.
Yeah, and then they have a problem with concrete, Dan. So now they're a little more open to steel barriers instead of a wall. Really, what is the difference?
They're not really. I mean, this is moving the goalposts, right?
Okay.
This is just stall tactics. They need to appear to be reasonable. They can't just say no, no, no.
I would say goalposts right now. It's too soon.
Well, yeah,
I mean, after
true.
Last night's game.
It's true.
Thank you.
Well,
sorry.
Well, the Democrats are in the Cody Parkey position because they're clanking it off the goalposts that they're moving as the president digs in. And put this question out, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. As the president and, frankly, his best surrogate on the topic, you just heard from Lindsey Graham, are they right about this? Not going to move as long as the Democrats, the radical left, are just playing cheap race-hustling identity politics and are not going to support things they previously supported and are not going to advance the interests of the nation by providing a modicum of funding for enhanced border security. Is the president right to dig in, as he said, for months, years?
I just want to check that the shutdown could go on for months or even a year or longer. Did you say that?
I did.
Is that your,
I did.
Is that border your assessment of
I did
where we
say
are?
That. Absolutely, I said that. I don't think it will, but I am prepared, and I think I can speak for Republicans in the House and Republicans in the Senate. They feel very strongly about having a safe country, having a border that makes sense without borders. I've said it many times. We don't have a country.
What about that?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And he also suggested late yesterday, after he got back from Camp David, about declaring a national emergency. So they'd build the wall without congressional approval, and they'd use our military, U.S. military, to build that wall.
We're looking at a national emergency because we have a national emergency. Just read the papers. We have a crisis at the border of drugs, of human beings being trafficked all over the world. They're coming through. And we have an absolute crisis, and of criminals and gang members coming through. It is national security. It's a national emergency.
And by the way, the whole discussion over the weekend on the Sunday talkies about the whether or not the president has the power to do this. Not even a question. He absolutely has the power under his emergency powers to direct the military to construct. Absolutely does. Don't believe me. Do not believe me. Believe Adam Smith, Democrat representative from Washington, who's the incoming House Armed Services Committee Chairman, who was on with Clinton Foundation Donor Zero on the topic.
Does President Trump have the ability, have the authority to declare a national emergency, have the military build his wall?
Well, unfortunately, the short answer is yes. There is a provision in law that says the president can declare an emergency. It's been done a number of times, but primarily it's been done to build facilities in Afghanistan and Iraq. And in this case, I think the president would be wide open to a court challenge saying, where's the emergency? You have to establish that in order to do this. But beyond that, this would be a terrible use of Department of Defense dollars.
See,
the president spends most of his time talking about how we're not spending enough on national security. Now he wants to take $20 billion out of the defense budget to build a wall.
Adam Smith is about the best you're going to do. At least he was honest about the law and the president's power. He's just dishonest about the rest of it. And it's an insight into their posture with respect to this issue. Oh, the Democrats, the spendthrift Democrats, are worried about $20 billion out of the more than half a trillion dollar Pentagon budget for border security funding. As Lindsey Graham mentioned, they previously voted for $25 billion in border security funding. But now they're worried about $5 to $20 billion. Give me a break. They're lying. They're posturing. They're demagoguing. They're pandering to their radical left, Ocasio-Cortez, Talib, MFer base. That's what they're doing. Oh, and by the way, yeah, right. It's been used in Afghanistan, these emergency powers, to build green zones in Afghanistan and Iraq. Right. Oh, boy, what a concept. Building a green zone on our border so that maybe, for example, one Ronald Singh isn't murdered by somebody here illegally.
That did not get the coverage it deserved.
Oh, imagine that. Imagine that,
I mean,
isn't it?
He played some sound bites of his brother crying. It was heartbreaking, but it just did not. He pulled him over, suspected DUI driver, and then he ended up murdering him because he's here illegally. Same thing that happened with that University of Iowa student. She said to the guy that was here illegally, I'm going to call police on you. And he killed her because of that, because he was here illegally, too.
Did you catch any of that memorial service to the fallen officer in California over the weekend? Newman, California?
Seconds. I'm not kidding you. Yeah. 30 seconds. I saw a little video clip. That
yeah,
was it.
We'll play that in a moment. Annie on the north side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is so infuriating to me that, first of all, how many Americans have to die at the hands of if you come to this country illegally, you're a criminal. Politicians care more about these people than they do Americans. That police officer didn't need to be killed, and I wish it up. You lock your doors at night. You have a fence around your backyard for safety and protection. Why wouldn't you do it to this for this country? It's just, it's disgusting, and Trump should keep the government shut down and not give in. This is enough of this nonsense, and Americans need to wake up. It's getting old and tiring. That poor police officer, the blood is on their hands for every American that was killed or murdered by illegals here that don't belong in our country.
Thanks for the call, Annie. And here's the thing. To her point, they don't care about Democrats, don't care about police officers, they don't care about Americans. They care about mascots, which is how they treat persons trying to enter this country illegally. They're mascots for the aggrandizement of their political power to whip their lobotomized pea hat wearing base into a frenzy to put pressure on weak-kneed Republicans in Congress and elsewhere. But the reality is, and this is an important point, they don't care about those people either. They don't care about the people trying to get across the border. They don't really care about the two kids that died in ICE custody. They don't care except as they're valuable for a political tool any more than they care about that 7-year-old girl that was killed in a drive-by in Harris County, Texas. They don't care about her. They don't care about Hedia Pendleton. As soon as these individuals lose their political cachet, the story disappears. When it was a white man that was suspected of opening fire on the car carrying Jasmine Barnes, it was a national story.
It was hate crime.
Houston Texans wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins is given $75,000 to find the killer. When they identified two suspects who happened to be African-American and took them into custody in connection with the shooting, story disappears. You think they care about Jasmine Barnes? You think they care about the people trying to enter the country legally? Only as the means to their political ends, not as human beings. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan and Amy,
The government was established for one main primary purpose, was to take and guard our nation, protect us, and keep us safe in that. It wasn't for all these other programs and all this and that. That's all secondary. It's all beside it. They need to take and keep that government shut down, put that wall up, or it'll never happen. They'll never get it if they don't get it now. And the point is that the government is basically so far out of whack of doing all kinds of things that they were never established for. That's why we got here.
Thanks, Craig.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, I mentioned the murder of Ranil Singh. I know you talked about it last week. Ranil Singh, a California police officer, killed in line of duty. Fiji-born American hero. He was hailed Saturday at his memorial service. 33 years old.
Five-month-old child.
Hardworking immigrant who worked his way up to become an officer in the small town of Newman, California, out Modesto way. There's an immigrant. Does his life matter? Did it the right way? As his police chief, Richardson, explained to those in attendance.
And he sat and told me about all the pride he had in America and how much it meant to him to be here and to be getting this opportunity.
To be a police officer. That's what he wanted to do. Even a more powerful statement, and the police chief broke up, by the way, during his eulogy.
Yeah.
It was tough. This officer, Jeff Harmon, he was the first speaker at Singh's funeral. I know you didn't see it if you just watched the D.C. press corps because their coverage, because there was no coverage. Fiji-born American hero, no coverage. Police officer. Jeff Harmon, what's right and what's wrong about what's going on in America right now and how Officer Singh, Corporal Singh, represented everything that's right?
Thank you for taking the time to honor a man who stood for so much of what is right in our world and yet unfortunately was taken too soon from us by what is wrong in our world. The contrast between right and wrong is a framework that I'd like to use for just a moment to offer some hope and some perspective on how we can move forward from such an impactful, painful loss, such as the loss of Ranil. See, what's wrong with the world is that far too often, those who we love are taken from us by the selfish acts of others. But what's right in the world is that there are those like Corporal Singh who have made personal commitments to not let the darkness with which some operate extinguish the light that they have to offer. What's wrong with the world is that too often those who have stepped up to serve and given so much to their fellow man are taken advantage of by those who refuse to pull even their own weight. But what's right in the world is that there are people like Ranil who truly understand what it means to be a productive member of society and are willing to work in double time to make up for those who never will. What's wrong with the world is that frequently, even the very institutions and bodies that we entrust with providing an environment in which the American dream, where those who choose to get on board and work toward creating a land where ultimate freedom and order peacefully coexist, can truly become a reality. Oftentimes, what is created instead is a culture where what we say we value most is not rewarded, but at times, in fact, is punished or looked down upon. But what's right in the world is that there are those like Ranil, who, in spite of all of that, choose to work hard, even in the face of opposition, because they believe in that dream so strongly, and they won't let anything stop them from working toward what they believe is right. What's wrong with the world is that police officers, sheriff's deputies, and other law enforcement officers are regularly viewed under a microscope, questioned on every single one of a million decisions they will make in their career, and sometimes even made to be the enemy, at times by the very people that they are sworn to protect. But what's right in the world is that there are officers like Ranil, who probably more than anything else wanted to be home on Christmas night with his wife and his young son, but instead made a selfless choice to serve all of his community, knowing that there were more, many more, than just his own family who needed his protection that night. Corporal Ranil Singh is a shining example of what is right in our world.
Amen to that. Can't do better than Officer Harmon did.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Things looking up in 2019. You had 312,000 jobs created in December, according to last week's report. You got Elizabeth Warren admitting she's not a person of color.
I saw that. She was in Iowa this weekend, went to five different cities, and that was crazy because someone asked her about, you know, why'd you get the DNA testing done? And then she went on, like, I'm not a woman of color. I do not belong to a tribe.
Better inform Harvard Law School, because that's not how they profiled her as a member of the faculty. But that's okay. We're still, just get progress comes in fits and starts. Also, hey, Thelma has found her Louise. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has found Rashida Tlaib. And the two of those gals together are going to take the Democratic Party right off the, well, I won't tell you how it ends. Ocasio-Cortez, profiled by a restrained, because it's tough to restrain his giddiness, Gloria Vanderbilt's kid there on 60 Minutes yesterday.
Was he doing tequila shots? Because he did for his New Year's Eve special.
Missed that.
You know. Oh, yeah. Did tequila shots and then talked about who his mom slept with. Marlon Brando, it was very uncomfortable.
So he and his girlfriend Don Lemon,
yeah,
they dished.
No, yeah, Andy or what's his name, Andy Cohen was with him, but yeah, they dished.
Any body shots off Don Lemon's ripped abs?
No. Right. But anyway, so now he's back to covering news or what's perceived as news.
Ocasio-Cortez is the thought leader, which I know is one of those phrases you're supposed to remove from your lexicon in 2019. But it seems appropriate for Ocasio-Cortez, thought leader of the left. She's got a 12-year plan to do a bunch of things, including make America fossil fuel free. All the details aren't in place, but, you know, thinking big thoughts.
Would convert the entire U.S. economy to renewable sources of energy in just 12 years, while guaranteeing every American a job at a fair wage.
You're talking about zero carbon emissions, no use of fossil fuels within 12 years?
That is the goal. It's ambitious. And
how is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now. What is the problem with trying to push our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible?
This would require, though, raising taxes.
There's an element where, yeah, people are going to have to start paying their fair share in taxes.
Do you have a specific on the tax rate?
You know, you look at our tax rates back in the 60s, and when you have a progressive tax rate system, your tax rate, you know, let's say from zero to $75,000 may be 10% or 15%, et cetera. But once you get to, like, the tippy tops on your 10 millionth dollar, sometimes you see tax rates as high as 60 or 70%. That doesn't mean all $10 million are taxed at an extremely high rate, but it means that as you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more.
What a dissertation.
70% more. She wants to tax the wealthy.
I think what you should do
climate change
is stick to the Breakfast Club dancing routine that getting more positive press on. But she wanted to make it clear, she's a socialist. Oh, yeah. But not in, like, the Castro
Venezuelan
you know, Trotsky way.
What of my policies most closely resemble what we see in the UK, in Norway, in Finland, in Sweden?
Actually, they don't.
No, they don't.
In
Sweden, the more money you make, the less you pay in taxes.
Well, in Sweden, the difference is, for example, and this is why Sweden often ranks ahead of America on economic freedom indices. So Sweden has this thing called private pensions.
Yeah.
Sweden has this thing called
school
choice.
They've privatized the pensions. Yep.
I wonder.
They privatized the railroad, the railway system there, too.
With this pending L.A. school teacher strike. So is Ocasio-Cortez supporting school choice in L.A.? Or is she going to stand with the teachers' unions? She doesn't even know what she believes. She's a 29-year-old nitwit who's captured America's heart and the Democrat Party. And boy, is it fun to watch. There's a funniness too. There's another moment in that 60 Minutes thing where Anderson Cooper politely questions her about all the things where she's like catastrophically wrong, absurdly wrong, $21 trillion Pentagon budget and these sorts of things. And she essentially gives the Trump answer, which is, I'm directionally correct. The details aren't important. What's important is I'm morally right. It's fascinating. For more on this topic and a dissection of Scandinavian tax policy, we're pleased to be joined by Jim Pethkuka, CNBC contributor and columnist for the American Enterprise Institute. Jim, thanks for joining us. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year.
What do you think about Ocasio-Cortez's ambitious, as she terms it, 12-year plan?
I'm a big believer on the factually correct side. I guess I'm old-fashioned. I understand, having high aspirations and high goals. But I think it's at least important that we know the politician understands that their goals are aspirational, going to be extraordinarily hard, realizes what the trade-offs are. And then last point, understanding the trade-offs, that if you want one thing, you may have to give up another thing. I think that's really important. That's what you often don't hear about, like the costs and the benefits, when you hear people who are activists describe policy. And right now she's talking more like an activist than a serious policymaker. Which, listen, I think she's about the most important Democrat there is. She's changing the Democratic debate. Now everyone else is talking about a Green New Deal. You'll have other Democrats talking about, much higher tax rates. So, she's a thinkfluential. Absolutely.
That's a new word, thinkfluential. That could replace the thought leader for 2019.
But did you laugh when she suggested taxing the wealthy 70%?
Listen, that's a high tax rate. Yeah. That's a tax rate I haven't seen in this country for since the 1960s. And I think there's somehow the idea that there is no downside because the economy grew fast in the past when we had high tax rates, even though it was a very different economy, a very different tax code. Again, those differences often get ignored, which is how activists talk. They don't give you the context. So she's still talking like an activist and someone pushing an idea rather than someone who's going to be serious and really think about the differences between now and then and the downside to perhaps doubling top tax rates at a time when the U.S. already faces a historic downshift in economic growth.
You know, the other thing, it's a good point you bring up, like we have to have adult conversations with people about concepts that everyone should have learned in high school, like we live in a world of scarcity, which is what you were describing. Politicians, both sides, play this game because they know that the public isn't great at comprehending or wanting to deal with abstractions. So making choices, because we live in a world of scarcity, and also the concept of opportunity cost. So, what didn't happen or what could have happened or what did happen because you chose one policy to the exclusion of other, there are costs that you pay, and this is sort of the trade-off thing as well. So, yes, will people still get along if you increase the top margin rate to 70%? Sure, just like they did previously. But the impact that would have, Dan,
there has been zero research on the impact of very high tax rates on how people pick their careers, whether they decide to become, Elon Musk, or they decide to do something else with their lives. Again, she nor Paul Krugman, they have any idea, and that's pretty important, what people decide to do with their lives, not just how a higher tax rate affects revenues over the next 2 years. Yeah, there's research on that kind of stuff. But like the bigger, longer term stuff that's really, really important, they have no idea. And they're just picking numbers out of a hat because the U.S. grew at a certain rate 50 years ago.
Well, and also, isn't this just illustrative of the mind's eye here? So they look at people as revenue agents for the state. They don't look at people in terms of their personal fulfillment, development, contribution on their own terms. And so that's a real distinction in terms of worldview.
It's understanding that you're dealing with human beings whose behavior is influenced by things, is influenced by incentives and how how policy encourages or discourages certain actions. One of the key sort of breakthroughs that we had in this country is that tax rates matter. They're not the only thing that matter, mm-hmm. but they matter how people behave. And she's saying, well, you know, to the extent she's thought it through, you know, that everything else would be the same, but we'll have a 70% top tax rate. And then those other countries, they also have value-added taxes. All the money isn't coming from rich people. It's coming from everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Democrats are very worried that middle-class people will not accept higher taxes for the plans because they don't talk about it, and they only talk about people who make $10 million or more.
All right, switching gears here. Dan mentioned earlier the December job report. U.S. added 312,000 jobs. The unemployment, though, went up to 3.9%. Why did the job numbers and the unemployment rate go up?
Right, because the workforce. You have people coming off the sidelines. The workforce gets bigger. So we really don't care about the higher unemployment if you have more people actively looking for work. So that's fine. I don't care about, no one cares about the 3.9% number. Listen, it's a lot more jobs. That's great. It's pretty impressive for an economy that's, you know, been this long of an expansion. And, the economy looks like it will be slowing. We can still generate jobs. You still might see the unemployment rate go down. But I wouldn't expect the economy to go better for the next couple of years as it did last year.
Now, I know, kind of stock picking is not your forte or focus. But there's an interesting data point I saw over the holidays as the market was all over the place. Midterm election years, this is from some analyst, the Dow was off 16%. There's a sell down 16%, and that's about where it was at the end of the year. And the year following midterm elections, this is Republican and Democrat presidents, up 32%. Is that just more sort of fun with numbers, or do you expect this to be a good year to be in equities?
I am not a registered representative.
I understand.
I am not a money manager. What I can say is that 2019 looks like a year of slower growth. That's not going to be great for profits. You have a trade war, maybe not so great for profits.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you how to invest. Listen, I'm a long-term investor, you know. Dan, I know you're still a day trader. It's always the 90s for you. You're always
the go-go 90s.
I don't have it. I don't have that in me. God bless you.
You know, it's a high wire act over here, Jim. That's the way I live.
Yeah, that's how you love the adrenaline rush. Not so much.
Well, you've got a family to look after, so I understand, you got to be a little bit more reserved. He is.
I know. You like going all in every day, all day. I'm a little more cautious.
You know, the problem is I just keep watching Rounders, and it works out for Matt Damon in the end, so I figure, at some point I got to be Teddy KGB. He is Jim Pathakoukas, CNBC contributor, columnist for the American Enterprise Institute. Jim, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Yes, I'm back. I've run out of booze, cigars, and ammo. So it was time to come back to base camp.
And I thought you were delivered in a box this morning by Amazon. We cut you out of it, and here you are.
Yeah, back just in time to witness this. The best call of last night's fateful field goal attempt from Spanish radio, of course. And by the way, not from a Simpsons episode. Are you ready for this?
I can't wait.
Pie de Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló. No, señor. Los Higos se van con la victoria. ¡Ay, papá! No, señor. No, señor.
Spanish Frank Sinatra. I think it's loosely translated, he missed the kick.
Yeah, well, no, señor, no means no way, no way, no way.
That was fantastic.
And then started singing Chicago. It was great.
Now, did you see, though, yeah, I did. You did see the stadium if you went to Soldier Field, but the kick was tipped. It was tipped.
Yeah.
Partially blocked.
Oh.
And that changed the trajectory. Now, so you say, well, Cody Parkey shouldn't be the GOAT because the kick was tipped. However, I would say from 42 yards, you need to get that ball up faster. So I still blame Cody Parkey.
You do. Yeah. I mean, we were bounced from the playoffs by a matter of inches. It hit the upright and then the crossbar, and I really thought it was going to bounce the other way, and it bounced.
Then you haven't seen Cody Parkey hit the crossbars or the uprights earlier this year because it never bounces in.
No, well, it's his sixth time he's done it this season.
Yeah.
He's 26 years old. He's young, rookie. But he feels bad, Dan.
He's got to be an NFL record.
You think you're having a bad day today.
I feel terrible. Let the team down. That's on me. So I have to own it. I have to be a man. And
can't blame
the
upright.
Unfortunately, that's the way it went today.
So he's, he realizes it.
All right, he's got to lick his wounds, just like Ed Burke. Ed Burke's clanking around, too, a little bit under indictment.
But still defiant. He's going to still run for a 13th term, Dan.
Oh, of course he is.
50 years is not enough. Don't you get it?
Certainly can't get enough of Ed Burke, especially if you like extortion. Then you want him to stick around. He's an impresario, well, up until recently. 8 months of wiretaps, 9,500 conversations.
Ooh.
Boy, I'd like to see some transcripts. Ed Burke, though, telling family and friends to hold fast.
By now, I'm certain that you've learned of yesterday's events. I want you, my friends and supporters, to know that I fully intend to seek re-election. And I am hopeful that you and my many friends will continue to do the work you've already been doing.
Yeah.
I appreciate your
shaking down
help
people
and your
for
support.
Me.
And I want you to know that my family and I want you and your family to have a healthy and wonderful new year.
Aw.
You know what? That's so sweet.
Well, thanks so much, Uncle Ed.
Gosh.
Isn't he great?
Mayor Emanuel responded to him stepping down as chairman of the Finance Committee.
And I believe this reflects his affection for the city and his deep respect for the institution of the
question.
City Council.
Yeah. He loves the city so much, he's going to extort anyone who tries to open a business in his ward or anywhere else. He's a property. By the way, some of those clients of Ed Burke probably seeking new representation at this point.
Yeah,
so that'll be to the benefit of Madigan. So the good news is that, they'll just be a move away from one of the legalized kingpins in Chicago to the other. Lest you think anything would change with Ed Burke's indictment, much less his conviction. Continuing our series of candidates for mayor, our discussions with them in the context of this. Oh, plus another esteemed member of the city council.
Yeah. Oh.
Ricky Munoz.
Yeah, he didn't have his wife on, but we played her audio about how he's been addictive and a womanizer.
And
she finally had the strength to come forward.
And have him arrested for abusing her.
Yeah.
So another
battery. They went to court on the same day. It was a great day for Chicago politics.
I just don't want Ricky Munoz to get lost because, again, two Latino community leaders, Ed Burke and Ricky Munoz, they care about the people. They represent the people, you see. And, I mean, Munoz is a child compared to Burke. He's only been there for 2 decades.
25 to his 50.
Yeah. Yeah. So Munoz not running for reelection. But should he step down? Has anybody asked any of the P-hat leftists in office in this city and state? Should Ricky Munoz step down? Anybody in the Chicago press corps querying Democrats about that? Much less Ed Burke? Well, let's query a Democrat. He's LaShawn Ford. He's a state rep, and he's a candidate for mayor, West Side state legislator. LaShawn, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and Amy. And I got to say, Amy had the best line, the Bears were bounced from the playoffs.
Yep.
No pun intended.
There you go. Well, why don't we start with some of your Democrat colleagues there, Ed Burke and Ricky Munoz. Should they be bounced from the city council?
You know, I got to tell you, if their allegations are true, I would say yes. There's no doubt that we should always let the justice system take place and justice prevail, and people guilty of crime should always pay the price. And so, you know, we have to have a society that's fair. You know, I've had my incident with the feds, and so I'm not so quick to just say that a person should just be thrown under the bus. But if Ed Burke is guilty of extortion, then he should go to jail.
Well,
but I also know that it's got to be a time where we get rid of the politics that closes government off and only make it work for a few of the well-connected people. And that's what all of this 50 years of being in power has done.
Well, they're all connected. I mean, Tony Preckwinkle obviously is connected. She's giving back the money that was raised at his at the fundraiser that he had at his home, but she's calling on him to resign. So Susana Mendoza, Gary Chico, Bill Daley, they're all trying to separate themselves from Ed Burke, but they're all, don't you believe, in on it with him since day one?
You know, I mean, it's clear that that's the circle of money, and those people stick together, and what we have is a network of people that's been holding Chicago hostage, keeping us from going forward, keeping Chicago taxpayers at bay, and constantly, because of their corruption in the city council, because of their corruption in the county, because of the corruption in the state, taxpayers pay. And we continue to go after taxpayers because we have to continue to pay for the corruption of politicians.
The Tribune, Chicago Tribune, opined over the weekend about the quote-unquote corruption tax in Chicago. And they offered what I consider rhetorical questions, but I'll ask you to answer them. The Tribune writer editorial board asked, is Chicago the world-class city its mayors brag about, or is it a land of despots? And if its public officials didn't levy a corruption tax, how many more businesses and jobs would call this city home? That's a particularly salient question for you, representing the West Side, which has a dearth of businesses and jobs.
Yeah, I think Chicago politics have been corrupted for such a long time, and then we have a Daley coming back to drain the system even more. There would be no way the Daley family would be wealthy as they are if it wasn't for the taxpayers. The taxpayers have made the Daley family rich, wealthy, and now they want to come back and do it to us some more. It's ridiculous. I mean, we have to take the Chicago politics and the state government back to the people and let them run the government.
So why do you want to be mayor of Chicago? That is a job that it just bewilders me that anyone would want to have that job.
You just heard why. Get rich.
Yeah, I live in Chicago, and you can look at my, and I heard that part about get rich. You can look at my V2s and where I raise money. I don't try to raise money and be connected to be owned and bought by lobbyists. Why do I want to run? I mean, I'm a taxpayer in Chicago. I have seen how government has destroyed the fabric of Chicago's communities, and I don't plan to leave Chicago. I plan to be a taxpayer in Chicago and stand up and make it better. I know out of all of the candidates in the race for mayor, none of them have the goals of making sure that the people downtown, the people in Lincoln Park, the people in Streeterville no longer have to suffer from high property taxes because we're neglecting the west and south sides of Chicago. The people in Chicago suffer because of the neglect of black people in this city. And we have to make sure that everybody has a fair shot as it relates to education. We can't continue to do business as usual.
Well, wait a second. You've got all these other esteemed black candidates and office holders, Tony Preckwinkle, not office holders, Lori Lightfoot, Willie Wilson, and then an office holder in Dorothy Brown of sorts. What about to all of those representatives of the black community? If we're going to play this, which I hate to play, this race identity politics that, you know, you have to be black to represent black people. You have to be Latino to represent black people. Right.
You don't look, you know, and white people have said that they would vote for a black person because they did it for president. They do it all over the country.
Of course.
They've done it for years. So I'm not concerned about that. I just know that we can't have Daley as the mayor because he's been a part of the destruction of Chicago. We can't have Paul Vallis as mayor. He's been a part of the destruction of Chicago school systems. We can't have Toni Preckwinkle as mayor. She's entrenched and been a part of the destruction of communities. We can't have Susan Mendoza. She's been a part of the destruction of the community. And I'm just saying that if we're going to turn the page in Chicago, we have to make sure that we have someone that understands the heart and soul of the communities and that's willing to stand up and fight the powers to bring the government back to the common people so that we could stop raising taxes. We have to destroy the process that we're all under now.
Right. Well, we need to have some revenue coming in, and a lot of your opponents were suggesting a commuter tax, but if you look at what cities have a commuter tax, Detroit and Philadelphia, and I don't think that that's working for them. How do you feel about a commuter tax?
Oh, I'm totally against a commuter tax. And, you know, what makes no sense to me is that we continue to talk about just taxing people without even talking about fixing the structural problems that we have in the city. So we're going to say, let's just bring more revenue in so the government could continue to waste it. And we haven't fixed the problems that we have before we even take more taxpayer dollars. So we can talk about more taxes, but we're not going to talk about why we have to raise taxes and why we have this structural deficit in the city of Chicago. It's unfair to taxpayers that we continue to talk about, give me more of your hard-earned money without talking about fixing the problem.
Yeah, or certainly no discussion about reducing the spend. It's just dope, gambling, and big government. Those are the three prongs of the political class in Chicago, right?
Right, and that's unfortunate. And just because we bring in, as we have seen, just because we raise taxes, the bag tax, the sugar tax, the you name all the taxes that the city continues to raise on the working families, driving people deeper into poverty, driving people into homelessness, it's never enough because we're not fixing the problem. And so if we don't talk about fixing the problems and making sure that we shut off all the cronyism in the city of Chicago, you know, black people are not the only people that shut out of this government. There are struggling white people.
Oh, he was about to say who else was shut out of the government, and he got shut down. Oh, there you go. LaShawn, sorry, you were cutting out.
Yeah, I mean, black people are not the only people struggling in this city that's paying,
right, true,
that's paying taxes. White people in Streeterville, they struggle too. People in Lincoln Park struggle. It may look like people are doing well, but everyone is suffering under this attack on taxpayers.
That's true, and one of the reasons I like LaShawn is that he's not going to play the racial identity politics stuff. LaShawn, where can people get more information about your candidacy?
FordForChicago.com. And my commitment, Dan and Amy, is to make sure back to people, and we have to cut the cronyism in Chicago, and my campaign will give a chance to reset and destroy the old guards in Chicago.
He is LaShawn Ford, state representative from the West Side, currently running for mayor of the city of Chicago. LaShawn, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
Take care. And also, if you want an extended discussion on the issues, LaShawn sat down 6-8 weeks ago with me for an Against the Current long-form interview. We covered a lot of topics, so you can get that at upstream-ideas.com.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy picking up our discussion with State Representative LaShawn Ford, candidate for mayor of Chicago. Hey, the largest employers in the city of Chicago, the list was released by Cranes for 2018.
Yeah. Who's the largest?
We'll take a stab.
No, I don't.
You don't want to take a stab. Okay, great.
I don't want to play your reindeer games. Thanks for coming to work today.
Number one, federal government.
Okay.
Number two, Chicago Public Schools. Number three, City of Chicago. Number four, Cook County.
Oh, my gosh.
Number nine, State of Illinois.
So that's the number one business in Illinois.
Government. Five of the top nine, and rounding out the top ten, includes Advocate Healthcare, Northwestern Memorial Healthcare, University of Chicago. So they receive huge dollars from the government, too. Government-centric. Because you wonder why? You wonder why things aren't going so well? Illinois, only state in the Midwest with more government jobs than manufacturing jobs. Only state in the Midwest. More government, more politicians, more elected office holders than any state in the nation, despite being the sixth most populous and falling. More units of government than any state in the nation. So that's your path, because the Democrats, the new day the Democrats are promising under Team Pritzker, Madigan, Pritzwinkle, is more of the same. So if you think big government dope and gambling is the way to a better Illinois, you got your party.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, if you watch the Sunday talkies, and why would you? We can summarize them here for you, and then you don't have to endure the nonsense of it. Two questions repeated in a Pavlovian way by the fungible hosts of all these talk shows. Does Trump have the national emergency power to direct the military to build whatever structures he wants along the border? And two, why not just fund the small portion of the government that's furloughed and then continue negotiating with respect to funding for border security?
Well, the big talk on Friday is that, you know, we'll have a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers in exchange for the border wall. But no Democrats bit.
DACA has always been on the table. Does President Trump have the power? Does he have those emergency powers? The answer is yes. And don't believe me, conservative Republican. Believe Adam Smith, the incoming Democrat House Armed Services Committee chairman, who answered the question posed by fungible Sunday talkie host Clinton Foundation donor Zero.
Does President Trump have the ability, have the authority to declare a national emergency, have the military build his wall?
Well, unfortunately, the short answer is yes. There is a provision in law that says the president can declare an emergency. It's been done a number of times, but primarily it's been done to build facilities in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
You know, like the green zones. And
yeah. So good that it's been done to create safe spaces, if you will, for our troops overseas. So how about creating safe space along the border for Border Patrol? Works for me. Adam Smith gave the answer yes. Now, what about this other matter of, hey, just capitulate and give the Democrats what they want, which is end of the government shutdown, and then continue negotiating knowing that they'll be obstinate because they got what they wanted. Why wouldn't you do that? As if the answer isn't obvious, but Lindsey Graham gives an excellent dissertation in response to that question on Face the Nation.
Well, there are about 800,000 federal workers who are in this limbo, not being sure when they're going to get paid. So with that in mind, with them in mind, why can't you reopen the government while you argue about the things you just laid out?
Why would you negotiate with somebody who calls you a racist if you want a wall, who gives you a dollar for a wall, when the Democratic Party supported $25 billion in the past? We're not going to negotiate with people who see the world this way. We'll negotiate with Dick Durbin, but I'm not going to negotiate with somebody who calls the Border Patrol agents a bunch of Nazis when they're trying to defend the border against a mob. These caravans have changed everything. The reason you need $5 billion now and not 1.6 is the border is deteriorating in terms of security. We've got 11,000 unaccompanied minors coming from Central America, and it costs us $750 a day to house these minors, and only God knows what they go through to get here. The Democrats see our law enforcement officers as the problem. We see the illegal immigrants, the coyotes, and the drug dealers as a problem.
Well, what about until those people changes, who work for Homeland Security, who are carrying out the policies you're talking about, who are not going to get paid? Yeah. What about the Coast Guard?
Yeah, they're being held hostage. They're being held hostage by people who say you need $1 to secure the border. They're being held hostage by people
who accuse them. So you don't want to open the government and then continue talking?
I do want to open up the government, but the goal is not to open up the government. The goal is to fix a broken immigration system.
Bingo. Bingo. I'll tell you again, when Lindsey Graham is good, and it's not always, he's really good. He was good at the Kavanaugh hearing, and he was good on Sunday on this topic. For more on this said topic, we're pleased to be joined by Matthew Continetti, who is the editor of the Washington Free Beacon. Matt, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
What about President Trump's posture right now? I mean, I'll keep it shut down for months, maybe a year. Shouldn't take that long, particularly if he decides to exercise his emergency powers. So should he move in the direction of unilateral action, or should he continue this partial shutdown theater with Democrats?
Well, I think he's holding the threat of emergency action in reserve in case the talks continue to just be stuck at an impasse, which they've been for several weeks now. We're now in the third week of this shutdown. I think if it goes one more week, it will become the longest shutdown in history. Of course, it's a partial shutdown, which is different from the previous record holder, which was the famous shutdown between Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton in 1995. So he has that emergency power in reserve, and right now they're continuing to be at a standstill because really neither side has much incentive to give in.
But what about, I mean, the Democrats seem hung up on a concrete wall, and they seem to like the idea of a steel barrier wall instead of concrete, or is that just a stall tactic?
Oh, that's a stall tactic. I mean, if you listen to Nancy Pelosi, I mean, she's now saying that the wall is an abomination, and I'm not sure she would extend that, decline to extend that to the steel barrier that you can see through. This has become really kind of a values issue for both sides, and that's why it's so hard to resolve because, you know, on the one hand, Pelosi's looking at the polls, and she sees a majority is against a wall and a majority is for opening the government. But then President Trump's looking at his polls and he sees that the Republican Party is right there beside him and really believes not only in border security but also having a wall. So until one side really begins to feel pain and pressure from their own base, this is going to continue.
Well, right, and it's being ratcheted up. I mean, obviously, where the energy is on the left is not feeling any pressure per the celebratory reaction to Rashida Tlaib's call to impeach the MFer and Ocasio-Cortez on 60 Minutes yesterday night saying the president is obviously a racist. That doesn't seem to me that that's going to facilitate productive talks going forward.
That's right. Now, it's always important to remember that people like Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they generate all the headlines, but they're really not representative of the Democratic Party at large. You have to remember, the Democratic Party is, you know, at its root, the party of the government employee unions. And there is a danger for the Democrats that if this shutdown continues to stretch into months, as the president has threatened, those government employee unions are going to say to Pelosi and Schumer, come on, guys, you know, these are your voters that are suffering. These are your campaign donors that are suffering. And you're continuing to kind of have them hanging out there in the wind for what? For $5 billion, which is less than a rounding error in a one day's spend of the federal government. So I actually think I have somewhat of a contrarian position. I think the longer this goes on, the more leverage President Trump has. Because
Friday, yeah, they're not going to get paid this Friday, and that's going to be a big deal. I mean, TSA Union says that so far 170 agents have called out each day last week. And then you have Border Patrol agents, and you have ICE agents.
So replace them.
Replace them?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you want to put, I mean, sorry to interrupt, Matt.
Are you Ronald Reagan and the air traffic controller?
Well, I mean, look, you don't think that there are people out there that would welcome the opportunity to get into the civil service? Let's put that to a market test. As needed.
Right. Well, you know, this is where the competing pressure comes in, which is that, you know, last week the first action of the Democratic House majority was to put these bills to the floor, reopening the government and kind of severing some of the agencies from the Department of Homeland Security bill. And, you know, several Republicans in the House voted to reopen the government. Not many, but less than 10, but still that was something. And then I think we're up to three senators, Republican senators, saying that the government should reopen. So on the one hand, you have the pressure on the Democrats from, again, I think the public employees unions, who the longer this goes on, is going to say, you know, Pelosi, you're hurting your own supporters here. And then on the other hand, you have the Republicans who are in cycle in 2020, who come from, in particular in the Senate, states that Donald Trump did not win in 2016. And so who folds first? I mean, that's really, this is a poker game. It's going to come down to whose pain threshold is higher. Now, when I look at Donald Trump, I see a guy with a pretty high pain threshold. So
yeah.
I don't think it's going to end anytime soon.
Speaking of pain threshold, so what about within inside Republican ranks, the Romney op-ed criticizing the president, as well as Rick Wilson, this sort of consultant, cable network gadfly, not only going after President Trump on this whole wall funding shutdown issue, but talking about his 10-toothed supporters. How much real inertia is there within Republican ranks to support a primary challenge or to back up the rhetoric of a Mitt Romney or even a Rick Wilson?
Sure. Well, I would distinguish between Romney on the one hand and the campaign strategist on the other.
No, I agree.
The Romney op-ed really is not much different from what he's said in the past, which is, you know, if the president says something that he finds objectionable, he'll say, "I find that objectionable." On policy, actually, Romney doesn't have many strong disagreements with the president, especially on border security. In fact, in a subsequent interview, after the op-ed was published, he said, "Well, I'm with the president on border security and the wall." So that's kind of one of the ironies of Romney. I mean, he's saying, I'm going to criticize the president when I think it's necessary on tone, but really when it comes to policy, for the most part, Romney is basically a Republican, as is President Trump. You know, there's some dissent, obviously, within Republican ranks, a variety of attitudes toward the president, some public, some not. But I don't think the space is there for a successful primary challenge. You may find someone in the coming year declare a presidential primary challenge on the Republican side. But, you know, the history of these things, they don't succeed. That's one, I think, disincentive for a Republican to try to challenge the president at this point. And then the other reason is there's no room. The president continues to be extremely popular. You know, he's more popular now than other presidents who did take a primary challenge from within their own party. So, you know, media likes to speculate about it, but I don't see it happening at this time.
He is Matthew Continetti. He is the editor of the Washington Free Beacon. Matthew, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Golden Globes last night. Amy watched them, so you didn't have to.
Well, you left the Bears game early so you could watch the Golden Globes.
Yeah, right.
I know. I'm on to you.
But I did catch Christian Bale. He get the best actor for portraying Chaney in Vice. No surprise there, even though the movie, according to Michael Medved, who I take as an authority, was god-awful. Christian Bale started out good. He should have taken his own advice from his wife, as he explained.
Thank you to my beautiful wife, who told me less is more. Say less right now. She knows the dumb crap that can come out of my mouth at times. I can sink and ruin a perfectly good movie and a so-so career in one speech. So thank you for that advice, my love. I wouldn't be working without her.
Nice foreshadowing, because then he gets political.
He said, I've got to find somebody who can be absolutely charisma-free and reviled by everybody. So he went, that's got to be Bale in it. You know, thank you. And for all the competition, I will be cornering the market on charisma-free. What do you think? Mitch McConnell next? That could be good, couldn't it?
Charisma-free a-hole.
Thank you to Satan for giving me inspiration on how to play this role.
Oh, my God. That is sick. That's not even fun. People are in the, clapping in the audience. I watched it at the time. I thought it was gross. But I just can't
train
stop.
Train seals.
Yeah, train seals. But Christian Bale, I every time he speaks, you know, he should go through things with his wife first.
Take your I want you off set, Now, don't just be sorry. Think for one second. What the are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I walk around and rip that? No, shut up. Do I want? No. No. Don't shut me up. Am I going to walk around and rip down in the middle of a scene? Then walking right through. Like this in the background. What the is it with you? What don't you understand? You got any idea about, hey, it's distracting having somebody walking up behind Bryce in the middle of the scene.
That's that was to like a key grip on
right.
the studio set.
Yeah, it was like a Terminator movie, and they were filming a scene, and he went off on the guy who was walking behind him.
So what was he saying about charisma free a holes? What was he
Talk
saying about
Satan.
Being inspired by Satan?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Okay, we'll play it one more time.
Oh, yes.
The Philadelphia Spanish announcer's call of Cody's clank.
Pie de Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló.
Oh.
No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. No, señor. ¡No, señor! ¡No, señor! ¡Los Eagles se van con la victoria! ¡Ay, papá! ¡No, señor! ¡No, señor! ¡Chicago! ¡Chicago!
All right, now that's a low
no
blow.
Para
it's happening in our faces.
¡Philadelphia gana el partido! ¡Le dio el poste!
Oh, gosh.
Because we were ahead most of the game, so it was a little, it was awful. I feel so bad. Who's having a worse day today? Him or Ed Burke?
I'll tell you what, Senor is my new favorite broadcaster catchphrase, replacing Dick Enberg's. Oh, my! That's good. All right, switching gears, but he's a sportsman. Everybody has to enjoy that call that transcends politics and sports and city loyalties.
Real emotion.
I don't know if McCarthy's an East Coaster, so he's probably like a Giants or Jets fan. Can you imagine?
Let's find out.
We'll talk about that, and we'll also get his thoughts on Syria and the Mueller investigation. We're pleased to be joined again by Andy McCarthy, former Chief Assistant U.S. Attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review. Andy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm a Jet fan who's heard no shortage of no senor.
Yes.
My heart goes out to you guys today, and of all the places, I'm sure you wouldn't have liked this if it was a game against New York, but Philadelphia's got a sting. It's like the one place in the country where the fan base, on days where they don't have games, they go to the airport and boo the plane landing.
No kidding, so, right? Exactly. Booing Santa Claus, famously, precisely. All right. Well, I want to get your take. Let's get, not the legal realm, the foreign policy realm for a second, because you wrote about Syria. And you sort of have the same position I have. I'm not sure why I'm supposed to be so upset for about this troop withdrawal from Syria, even a conditional one, as John Bolton announced over the weekend, saying that this is pending a firm commitment from Turkey not to target the U.S.'s Kurdish allies. There's an interesting piece by a retired general in the Chattanooga newspaper, of all places. B.B. Bell is his name. And he spent 39 years in the service, 13 as a general. He wrote this: all of our senior military leaders, including me, were born and raised with the deployed expeditionary conflict mindset, where America, as the world's policeman, was the right thing to do. We were all nurtured in the globalist belief that in the post-World War II era, it was America's responsibility and indeed duty to police the planet and make everything safe for democracy. I spent 14 years deployed overseas, 10 of those as a general. Out there, I was born and raised to go forth and present America as the global policeman. And I did my job. Looking back, all this resembles what the Roman generals were taught to do by the empire. Go out into the vast empire, establish Roman rule of law, make friends and allies, and where you run into issues, bring military force to bear to solve the problem. That's what the Romans did, and that's pretty much the same thing we've been doing for the last 70 years plus. And he's, of course, suggesting not necessarily to our benefit. So I just thought about his review of American foreign policy post-World War II in the context of the Syria withdrawal and the hooting, hollering across the aisle about Trump's decision.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm very sympathetic to the general on that. I think that, Dan, that there's been like too much of a swing of the pendulum away from the Vietnam War era, where our veterans were just treated shamefully and anyone who was associated with that conflict was kind of tuned out. Mm-hmm. I think we have an over-reliance now on the generals. I think I have great respect for the war-fighting capabilities and ingenuity of people like, Petraeus and McChrystal and General Mattis, General McMaster, but as far as public policy is concerned, their opinion isn't worth anything more than mine. And I just think that sometimes we now treat, we have to do what the generals say, as if that was like, you know, that came down from Mount Sinai. It seems to me that after World War II, when the world sort of delusionally decided that there was nothing worse than war, which was an odd thing for the generation that fought the Nazis and Japanese imperialism to conclude, that they went to war precisely because there are many things that are more horrific than war, as horrific as war is. But we've gotten away from the idea that you go in when you need your military because there's some American interest that's at stake. You do whatever has to be done, whether it's to achieve victory over the enemy or to get the enemy to withdraw for whatever reason it is that you've sent your military. This idea that in order to vindicate American interests, we have to move into your crappy country for 10 or 20 years and spend $1 trillion to fix what we broke, to me is just preposterous. And it's based on this idea that there's a universal value system that everybody is signed on to, no matter what part of the world and what culture you come from. And everybody wants to live like Americans and Westerners. And if we only would just go in and show you how great Western institutions can be in your country, of course, you'll abandon your own culture and your own civilization and sign on to it. Most of the places that we've been in the last 20 years, they don't want American troops there, and the American people don't want American troops to be there. And if you look at what we've achieved in the 20 years since 9/11, and I'm somebody who strongly supported the intervention, particularly in Afghanistan, where we were attacked, you wouldn't even notice that there was much of an American footprint. I mean, in the end of the day, what did we accomplish in Iraq other than turning it into a satellite of Iran?
Yeah. Changing gears, a few days ago you wrote an article about Trump. He keeps giving Mueller reasons to pursue the collusion probe. Why is that? What is Trump doing, and what should he be doing to try and end this probe?
Well, I would think his lawyers would be telling him not to use the word Russia in any time that he could avoid saying it. And, you know, last week he gave one of the most preposterous versions of history. Unimaginable, this idea that the Russians went into Afghanistan because they were being attacked by terrorists. I don't know, said that, Russia had terrorists were coming into the country from Afghanistan. Russia is like 2,500 miles from Afghanistan.
You think at least he saw Charlie Wilson's war?
Yes.
Yeah, well, look, Russia went into Afghanistan because of totalitarian communist politics. And basically they had a
communist
pro-Soviet
regime
that was being attacked by fundamentalist Islamic militants because it was trying to change the culture in Afghanistan, which is what we were just talking about, right. There was a revolt that rose up against it. It didn't have anything to do with terrorists going into Russian territory. It was communist imperialism. And it suggests, first of all, it suggests that Trump doesn't understand the geopolitical threat that was posed by the Soviet Union, and that ought to inform people in terms of what Putin's revanchist ambitions are. It suggests that he doesn't understand the roots of modern militant Islam. But to me, as a lawyer who would think about, what would Trump's lawyers be thinking at this point? He's saying exactly what Putin would want him to say. And I just, for the life of me, I don't understand why the president would do that and why he would do it gratuitously. That was like apropos of nothing. Somebody starts to talk about the wall and the current standoff in Washington over the fact that a part of the government isn't funded, so we have a partial shutdown, and it's like the president said, that put me in mind of the 1979 Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And really?
Yeah. Well, but so on that score though, despite the astounding ignorance of that statement, I mean that's not evidence of anything. Except ignorance, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree with you. But look, what we're trying to assess here is what Mueller is doing, right? And I've always thought that Mueller has two objectives here. One is he wants to make a case on Trump if there's a case to be made. That doesn't mean that, he's necessarily going to go out of his way to do that. I think, as a matter of fact, he won't do that. I don't think there's evidence of a criminal conspiracy between Trump and Russia. Now, if they find something else along the way, he's obviously still digging. But at the moment, I don't think the president's going to be charged criminally. I've always thought the other part of Mueller's agenda, being an old FBI and Justice Department guy, is to justify the very controversial decision that was made by the Obama Justice Department and FBI to open an investigation on the opposition presidential candidate. And I think one of the things that Mueller's report is going to be used for is to say that even if there weren't crimes, there were grave reasons for suspicion that there were very disturbing ties between people in Trump's circle and the Russians, and that explains why Trump said many reprehensible, ingratiating things about Putin, both during the campaign and after the campaign. And I just think Trump continues to give him more evidence of that. I don't know why he would do that.
What about the pronouncements of the left? I mean, I get what you're saying about Trump. What about the pronouncements of the left impacting Mueller's investigation? And, for example, the Democrats are clearly looking for the Mueller report whenever it is delivered. to be the basis to substantiate their calls for impeachment, right? And right. Mueller is seeing, as we're all seeing, the likes of this Rashida Tlaib say, we're going to impeach this MF-er. And the concern Mueller would have, potentially, I don't know, I'm asking for your insight, that he would be seen as a collaborator with the most vulgar and radical elements of the left who desire impeachment by any means necessary.
Yeah, well, you know, look, this is a big problem, and I think that no matter what Mueller's report says, you know, if he doesn't charge, he'll be, you know, a tool of one side. If he does charge, or if he doesn't charge and he writes a screed that suggests that Trump is unfit, then he's a tool for the other side. What I think, Dan, is that we first have to decide who is Mueller and therefore what should his report say. I know everybody's talking about, you know, when his report comes out, who will get it? Who will decide what the public gets to see of it? My more fundamental question is what should be in the report? Remember, Mueller is merely a prosecutor. He is not counsel to a congressional impeachment committee. He is not like Bob Woodward writing a book about Trump's fitness. In the Justice Department, a prosecutor's job is to decide there's enough evidence to charge or there isn't. If there isn't, you don't write a fulsome public report. The Justice Department doesn't speak publicly about the evidence of uncharged people. And if you remember, when they removed Comey from office, it was on the basis, at least in part, of a memorandum that was written by Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, who up until recently has been supervising Mueller's investigation. And the main complaint that Rosenstein had about Comey was that he spoke publicly about the evidence in the case against Hillary Clinton, who was not charged,
right,
which was a big violation of Justice Department protocols. So it seems to me, I know that a lot of people will say, well, the evidence against Clinton was publicized, so the evidence against Trump ought to be publicized, whether he's charged or not. That's not the way the Justice Department works. And since Mueller is merely a prosecutor, I don't think if he doesn't have charges to bring against the president, then I don't think he ought to say anything more than there's not sufficient evidence to charge. So,
oh, that would be a moment.
There should be a big debate about why is it appropriate for Mueller to say anything more than that if he doesn't have charges.
No, it's an interesting point. I mean, in terms of, you know, professional ethos, I just don't know if such a thing exists anymore in our politics.
Yeah, right.
He is Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, nationalreview.com, where you can find all of his musings. Andy, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my sympathy, guys. Have a great week.
Thank
all
you.
All right, thanks a lot. And you joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
All right, it's time for Animal Stories with Uncle Dan and Little Amy.
Animal Stories?
Apologies to Larry Lujan.
Yes.
And a little Tommy. All right, this is a serious one. Now, we've had a story like this before, and we got some pushback. An officer shooting and killing a dog.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times it happens with pit bulls, and it's justified, but there's other breeds of dogs that are a little bit nicer in nature that may or might not should be shot.
Yeah.
But what's the circumstances surrounding this one?
Faulkner County Deputy Keenan Wallace, canine handler, fired Saturday after shooting a chihuahua during a service call.
A little chihuahua?
This is in Arkansas. And
don't tell me there's video of it.
I won't tell you there's video of it.
But I'm just going to play it for you.
Yeah. Do we have that? Do we have that audio?
I bet it sounds like this. Those are little ankle biter dogs. But chihuahuas, they can be feisty. I've got two on my block, and they think that they're bigger than they actually are.
Faulkner County Sheriff Tim Riles said in a Facebook post that the deputy who was fired said there, I believe there were numerous opportunities to de-escalate the situation. So here's the audio.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's video of it, too.
Oh, this is all right. Bring it on. I'm ready. I'm sitting down.
Okay. That's why I asked you to step to the door. see you guys acting right now.
You can ask that neighbor right there.
Do
these
you want
dogs.
To step to the road?
No, I don't want to step to the road.
Are you f***ing kidding me? Are you f***ing kidding me?
This
You're f***ing kidding me.
The chihuahua's rolling around in the grass.
I'm going to contact the sheriff. Thank
Sorry,
you.
We'll be here in just a second.
Thank you.
Stay right
get
here.
Off my f***ing right property. Here. You better get off my goddamn right property.
I'm telling you, stay right here.
Will you call my attorney?
Call whoever you need.
I'm not talking to
You're
you.
Right
I don't
here.
Have to talk
Sir,
to you.
Stay right here.
And I'm especially not talking to him.
Okay, that'll be fine.
Canine officer asked the dog's owner, Doug Kennedy, to come to the road to speak with him. When Kennedy refuses, the deputy walks to him, and this little chihuahua, of course, that's redundant, begins barking at him.
Yeah.
And so he barks at him, and you don't see the video, but you hear the shot, and then you see the dog writhing around on the ground.
Is he dead?
He is not dead. That's the good news. Apparently, he underwent surgery after suffering a shattered jaw as a result of the bullet.
Well, that'll stop you from barking.
That's a tough little, well, but not from writhing in pain. That's a tough little dog, said the owner. I mean, you know.
What? I mean, let's talk about quick on the trigger. Take a deep breath. It's a chihuahua. Even if they try to bite, their bark is worse than their bite. They have little tiny baby teeth. They can't, they're not effective.
You're a canine officer.
You have big dogs that are trained to.
What are you talking? What are you doing? And also, here's an idea.
Oh, they describe neighbors describe him as friendly and sweet, and all the kids on the block love that dog.
I don't understand even pulling the gun out in the first. It's a chihuahua. Here's the other thing, sir. Please control your dog. I mean, I got to tell you. You know.
Now that you're a dog owner.
Respect. Great respect for law enforcement. But stuff like this, I mean, it just drives you crazy because it's just such bad judgment calls. And you have to be better than the average bear when you're law enforcement. Oh. I mean, you are being held to a higher standard because you're a conflict resolver, not a conflict escalator. If somebody shot my dog.
Yeah.
I would lose my mind. I mean,
I would attack.
I would lose my mind. I'm glad I wasn't in the situation that Mr. Kennedy was with that officer because, I mean, he got properly upset as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and,
but what in God's name? I'm glad he got fired post-haste. At least the department took the right action.
Yeah, so not only are they performing surgery for the shattered jaw, but they're also removing bone that traveled to the dog's stomach. Because of the shot that was fired.
Tough little dog.
Yes.
Not tough enough to shoot, though, to stop him.
He's just like, what do you got? What else you got?
All right, now let's end on a good animal story.
All right, what do you have?
Working from home has plenty of perks.
This is funny.
But you lose the camaraderie of an office.
Yeah, you sure do.
For distribution sales manager Michael Rieg from Georgia, his dog Mika is a real asset when he's busy working away in his home office. It's helped ease his transition to telecommuting. And so much so, create an office atmosphere, that Mika has been named Employee of the Month at the Rieg household for 3 months running, complete with plaques and his picture posted on his office wall.
And it says Employee of the Quarter, Southeastern Sales Center. But guess what? There's another dog in the family.
Yeah.
Her name's Kaya. And never has gotten Employee of the Month because this dog is reportedly much more of a lady of leisure.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't stick with the dad, if you know what I mean.
One of the dangers of working from home, you get very lonely.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
I just watched that video of the chihuahua getting shot. I'm not happy either.
Out of my mind.
Well, they should charge the police officer or the sheriff's deputy was fired, but he should be charged with a crime. Animal cruelty. Lock him up. Lock him up.
No one's above the law, no question. I mean, if that had been a neighbor to neighbor... And again, you expect better from a canine officer. I agree. I mean,
he should pay for his medical bills.
If you don't,
veterinarian bills.
If you want to make your own judgment call, just, you know, we will post it. Go take a look at yourself. But we've got to switch gears and make a decision on whether we should impose capital punishment on Ed Burke. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
Ed Burke under indictment and offered this message of good tidings to all of his friends and supporters and extortion victims on Facebook, of all places. Ed Burke's discovered Facebook. Never too old to learn.
By now, I'm certain that you've learned of yesterday's events. I want you, my friends and supporters, to know that I fully intend to seek re-election. And I am hopeful that you and my many friends will continue to do the work you've already been doing. I appreciate your help and your support, and I want you to know that my family and I want you and your family to have a healthy and wonderful new year. May God bless you and your families.
Well, golly gee, thanks, Uncle Ed. But
is he sending us Christmas cards too?
Here's the question, though. Ed Burke's indicted. Say he gets convicted on the extortion charges.
Yeah.
There's a lot of belief that something's going to change in Chicago. You've got 8 months of wiretaps. You got 9,500 conversations, most of which we'll probably never hear, just like we didn't hear the Blago wiretaps, those conversations. Do you think anything will change in Chicago if Ed Burke is indicted and is convicted and sent to prison?
Do you think anything will change if he doesn't win re-election? He's still, he stepped down as chairman of the Finance Committee. But
it's even less.
But he's not stepping down as an alderman, which out of all the candidates, Tony Preckwinkle leading the charge, say he should step down.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you believe anything will change?
Also, do you believe that he's been doing this for years and this is just the first time he got caught?
I mean, of course. I mean,
it's 50 years. He's had a half a century in power to do this.
And to that point.
Did his wife know, who's an Illinois Supreme Court justice?
Oh, sure. Of course. Ann
Well,
Burke.
I wonder how things are at home, Dan. I don't know if it was a good weekend for the couple.
Well, you can ask her if you see her out in public. She's easy to spot. She's the one who drives a Bentley with an Illinois State Supreme Court plate on it.
Ouch. Let's draw attention to ourselves.
So the interesting thing about 50 years of doing this and what it speaks to about Chicago's political culture, the kleptocracy. ChicagoCityWire.com, we looked at donors to Burke. We know who some of the recipients are, including those Republicans who have now gone mute. They love to go after Madigan. Why nothing on Burke? Jim Durkin, recipient of campaign donations. Dan Cronin, Republican DuPage County Chairman, recipient of Burke campaign donations. All those Republicans like Pat Brady who were at Burke's Christmas party, actually a donor to Ed Burke's campaign fund. Pat Brady, former state Republican Party chairman. Where's the hue and cry from Republicans? Interesting. Here's the thing, though. The donors. 60 top individual donors, including lobbyists, liquor store owners, billionaires, and workers' comp lawyers, have given Burke a total of 965 grand since 1999. So 965 grand over 20 years, in the scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. It's not like he's getting big six-figure donations. Here's what's actually happening. What's actually happening is it's wetting your beak across your entire client pool, across every transaction in your ward and outside of your ward, where you can shake people down because they need something from the city council. So that's the thing. So that you think that why would he go after this Burger King franchise owner for small potatoes, permit expediting fees and whatnot? Because that's his business.
Well, yeah, and he yanked the permits once they didn't use his tax firm company. And then he shook them down for $10,000 to donate to Tony Preckwinkle's Cook County Board presidency campaign.
Right. And you say, well, this is all chump. Anyway. This is all chump change.
Right. It's not.
It's chump change until you realize you spread that over 50 years and thousands of business owners and other clients. Boy, you really got a business on your hands, don't you?
Do you think more people will come forward now? Like, you know what? He shook me down, too.
Well, the only reason that that he's under indictment is because this Burger King owner wouldn't go along with the program.
Because the Burger King owner didn't, he wanted to have it his way.
Have it your way. Have yeah, it your way.
Except this is not funny.
No,
the Burger King owner didn't go along, and that's the difference. Because most people go path of least resistance. This is the way it is. I'll tithe to the feudal lord, and then I'll be able to get on my way and get my business up and running, do whatever I need, whatever I'm soliciting the city to approve.
I just wanted a new driveway and some remodeling.
But I just go back.
It's so ridiculous.
Let me suggest something in answer to my own question. As to, do you think anything changes? Did anything change when Governors Ryan and Blagojevich went to prison in successive gubernatorial regimes? Did anything change in Illinois' political culture in the last 20 years?
No.
No. You think anything's going to change if Ed Burke goes to prison? No.
But you know what? The people in his ward could wake up and not vote for him in 7 weeks from now.
How are the people...
That could be a start, don't you think? Anything?
I mean, the people in the 14th Ward, are they any different than most of the rest of the Chicago electorate? Chicago is a city that revolts against a sugary drink tax, but is blithely indifferent to the endemic extortion that propagates the feudal system of governance here. So, hey, I'm happy to be a serf is what we say, so long as you don't increase the cost of my Mountain Dew by 12 cents.
No, for some reason that hit mom's home. I don't know what it was.
Yeah,
people are going to Indiana to buy pop.
And what's changed? You think you won anything? Because you got the repeal of the sugary drink tax? Is that what victory looks like to you? Is that what paradigm shift looks like to you?
For me, I was just happy that people were engaged. But I want more, like you.
Greg in Rogers Park here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning. Happy New Year to both of you. I was a graduate student at UIC, and Professor Simpson and other professors back in the late 80s and early 90s were bringing out Ed Burke's rise to power and how he was restructuring the Finance Committee and speaking out against it and writing about it, and nobody ever did anything about it. And for years, all this has been going on. And then at the City Club of Chicago this past year, Mayor Emanuel and others were giving him gifts and saying what a wonderful man he was. And now they're outraged and saying we need to change the structure of power. It's a shame on all these people. It's a bunch of hypocrites. They should have done it years ago when this was going on and put this guy out of power. And instead, this guy's done this for over 50 years. I mean, Dick Simpson was bringing up his war chest of like $6 million back in like 1991. And that was extravagant then, and we were asking about that. Nobody did anything. And now everyone's outraged? Come on.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for the call, Greg. Well, that's right. That's the whole point, is they understand the electorate is indifferent, so they understand the electorate has no institutional memory, generally speaking. And so if we just wring our hands of Ed Burke and cast him aside, as all the Pauls that have had the relationships you, Greg, was describing for lo these many decades, if that's what they do, then the electorate will say, oh, look, he's not corrupt because he returned the money to Ed Burke, and he's saying Ed Burke should step down, and he's saying this is a sad day for Chicago. And so that's it. Okay, fine, good, moving on. No problem, nothing to see here. Those independent reformers like Hyde Park's Tony Preckwinkle. Hey. It certainly calls to mind, it was at Larry Bloom. I can't remember who said it, but when Larry Bloom from Hyde Park was... who was a erstwhile reformer, too, when he was indicted and convicted in fraud charges of some sort. Somebody opined, maybe it was Cass, I can't remember. In Chicago, even the reformers go to jail. But what changes? Nothing changes. Because as I referenced at the outset of this segment, the fault, borrowing from Julius Caesar, the fault is not in our stars. It is in ourselves. It's not fate. It's decisions that we make in Chicago, what we choose to tolerate. And will any of that change when Burke goes away? Well, look at all the candidates for mayor. Do you see any change on the horizon? In your ward with your alderman? At the state level?
I've got so many mimbos running in my ward, 47th ward. They came to my door like, do you realize Maya Pawar is not running again? I'm like, well, yeah, no blank. Yeah, what do you have?
He's running for treasurer. So what? What's the difference? city treasurer.
There's so many people chomping at the bit to have this popularity position. Like, who's going to be our next homecoming king of Wrigleyville?
And obviously all the statewide office holders are all Chicago Democrat potentates and House Speaker and Senate President. So what changes on the horizon exactly? And who's demanding any? Paul in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, so, you know, I remember reading a story and John Cass talking about it regularly that Michael Madigan doesn't own a cell phone. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if he's confirming his decision for not owning a cell phone today after Ed Burke's wiretap.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Paul. And I'll tell you what, I would trade a Ed Burke conviction for the disclosure of all those 9,500 conversations over the last 8 months.
Okay.
Because the real play, if you're going to try to undo the crony closed network in Chicago, is to expose everybody, bring them out of the shadows into the sunlight. Ed Burke's conviction for a couple years doesn't mean a darn thing. Jeff in Dundee.
Hi, Dan, Amy. Say, you know, you were mentioning, you know, that death penalty for Alderman Burke.
No.
It's not too far from the truth, because at his age, if he's convicted and sentenced the same as Blyvich, you know.
Won't happen.
Yeah, well, here, you do hang up a body bag in the courtroom or in the interrogation room, and then you say, listen, you can either have this or you cooperate with us and spill the beans on everybody else that's down there that's corrupt to the core.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. I mean, I'd love for Ed Burke to roll on people and take others down with him. I doubt that happens, but
it would be spectacular.
That'd be great. But I mean, Ed Burke is facing a couple of charges. Remember, Blagojevich is facing some 24. If he gets convicted on this or he pleads out, it'll be, you know, a Jesse Jackson-esque sentence, a couple years.
No,
he'll do
a
the
nice
time.
Nice federal prison.
Yeah, and then, you know, he'll lose his law license, but then he can go clerk for his wife Ann at the state Supreme Court after that. Michael in Oak Forest.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Yeah, I wonder what if Alderman Burke is going to lose his security detail /chauffeur.
He's going to upgrade to a bigger one. Thanks for the call, Michael. He's going to have a whole prison full of security guards.
Well, is his replacement, Pat O'Connor, did he take his security detail? I'm still waiting to see that.
That's a good question.
When they drop off his, because he might not demand one or need one. Burke felt for some reason he needed one. Well, why is that? Maybe because some people threatened him because they wouldn't give him campaign contributions?
He didn't need a security detail. It's absurd.
Four-man security detail. It's so stupid. It's a waste of taxpayer money.
Waste of taxpayer money.
After that guy.
It's just about everything the city of Chicago does. I don't think anything is going to change until you have some sort of borderline cataclysmic event. Pension funds fail. Exchanges leave. You really, we have a recession, and the house of cards that is Chicago and the state of Illinois really comes tumbling down, and people really start to feel the effects of all of the bad decisions that have been piling up like so much tinder waiting for a match to go up. I just don't see it. I think that all of this talk about Burke and this is going to be a new day and, oh, you're taking down one of the legalized kingpins. Yeah, that may all well be true. We've done it before. And what's changed? Nothing in my lifetime.
Talking about it's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.